7. This is the last chapter in the book, and it's called Other Pleiadian UFO Knots. After chapter 7, the book is UFO Contact from the Pleiades, written by Wendell Stevens, and this is chapter 7. This is the last chapter in the book, and it's called Other Pleiadian UFO Knots. After chapter 7, there's one more section called Conclusions, and that's the end of the book. When I started my investigation of the Pleiadian UFO contacts in Switzerland in late 1976, they had already been going on for over a year and a half, kept in relative secrecy within a closed group, and very little of the true nature of the contacts was getting out. Up to that time, I had never heard of UFO contacts from the Pleiades before, and the whole idea was fascinating and very exotic, and quite possibly not even true. At least, that's what I thought then. For a time, I thought these Pleiadian contacts originated with Edward Meyer on the 28th of January 1975, their first contact with him, when I got on scene and began working directly with Meyer and the other witnesses there. I discovered that these same UFO knots had been using another contactee before Meyer, one M. Rashid, a priest in Jerusalem. Then the contact notes, being kept by the Swiss group, showed that Meyer had been told that this group had at least two other active contacts with Earth humans going on at the same time. They had told him that theirs was not the only inhabited planet in the Pleiades, a comparatively young star group, and that other similar humans from some of those other planets were space travelers, and that yes, some of them were even contacting Earth. They told him that their group had contact operations going on in the Orient and in the western part of North America, but would not reveal any more, saying that it had nothing to do with their relations with Meyer. When I released my first article on the Swiss case in 1977, I was amazed at the amount of relevant information it stirred up. Over the next 3 years, my attention was called to several other UFO contactee cases where the UFO knots said they came from the Pleiades. The first was the discovery that a well-known Argentinian UFO researcher, Fabio Zerpa of Buenos Aires, was investigating a case involving Pleiadian contacts with engineer Enrique Rincon in Bogota, Colombia. This was also a profound series of ongoing contacts that began in November of 1973 and was still going on. He thought he was the only such case, too. Then, in 1979, a correspondent who had read my magazine article called my attention to another contactee case involving Pleiadian extraterrestrials who were visiting one Guillermo Torres of Hacienda Las Cruces and had been doing so since 1974. These Pleiadian ETs were also entirely human, as with the ones visiting Colombia. But these contacts were centered near El Tocoyo on the north coast of Venezuela. These ET visits and contacts were still going on, too, and hundreds of pages of notes and technical dialogue had been recorded. This was also kept highly confidential, with a small, select group of participants who were not letting the story out. Now the obvious question is, does Wendell Stevens speak Spanish? Because Venezuela, Argentina, these are Spanish-speaking countries, and I wonder how he solved that problem of language. He certainly did not carry along an interpreter who speaks English and Spanish, not on a military salary or retirement pension. So what did he do? Did he ask if anybody speaks English and arrange to have them there to do the dialogue? And the vernacular here is going to be about spaceships and about perhaps propulsion systems or some vernacular that's particular and esoteric to space travelers. That's an unanswered question. Continuing, then in 1983, Lou Farish of the UFO News Clipping Service sent me some notes on another Pleiadian contactee case that began in July of 1974 and was also still going on. It involved contactee Charles A. Silva, who was repeatedly met by an extraterrestrial human woman who said he could call her Ramatis, and that she and other UFO nauts associated with her came here from their home planet in the Pleiades. Those contacts were taking place in southern Peru, and they are also still going on up to this time. That would be the time of this writing, which I believe is the late 1980s. Silva described these contacts in a 411-page book privately published, which got little distribution. What a pity. Well, I'm going to try to find that book online right now. Okay, I did a search on Google using the advanced search engine. On the top line, I typed the word Peru. On the second line, I typed Charles A. Silva. And I found 2,000 web pages. I watched a video. It was a 6-minute, 32-second video by a lady. I think she said her name was Kathy. Or Catherine, I can't remember. And she said that a large planet called Wormwood or Planet X or Nibiru is coming into our solar system and that it's 3,200 times the size of Earth and that it will cause a lot of destruction and bad weather and so on. And the lady Catherine said she believes that it causes the Earth to heat up from the core. And this has melted the polar ice caps. And she said that Rama lives on Ganymede. If Jupiter is a star, then Ganymede is a planet. If Jupiter is a planet, then Ganymede is a moon. But she said that it has a thin atmosphere and that there are snow-peaked mountains on Ganymede. I think this is all very fascinating because Jupiter puts out light. That's why it's a sun. And if it puts out light, it probably puts out heat also, or energy. And Ganymede being very close to Jupiter, when you add the heat from Jupiter and you add the heat from the sun, you just might have a livable planet there in Ganymede. So Charles A. Silva has a nickname, Chacto, and I intend to read his book and everything else I can find about him because his story is interesting. If I find something interesting enough, I will read it to the viewers of this channel. Another correspondent who had purchased a copy of our preliminary report of investigation on the Swiss case wrote me and gave me the address of another contactee whose extraterrestrial visitor told him he came from the Pleiades, and more specifically, the Alcyone system. Now, I want to show you a picture of where Alcyone is located relative to the other Pleiadian stars. His experiences began with UFO sightings that led up to the later face-to-face contact and long discussions after Delamer Duverus was prepared for telepathic communication. Those contacts continued for many years and are still going on. And a whole philosophy of life and being an Earthman's relationship to the greater plan was imparted, and in 1973, Duverus published this information in a 214-page book titled The Golden Reed. Let me look that up. Okay, searching on the advanced search using Delamer Duverus on the top line and on the second line of the Google advanced search, I typed in The Golden Reed, and I found 341 websites. One site claims that you can download the book. It's www.linkrepo.com. I did not download the book. You have to log in, which means you have to join somehow, and I'm not sure if they charge a fee or what. But I did find 341 places where all of those, the two names Delamer and Duverus appeared on the page, and The Golden Reed appeared on every one of those results. I'm pretty sure that if I really worked hard at this, I could get a copy of the book online for free. But I have not done it. About the time I received that book, I received a registered letter from Argentina from an old friend, Pedro Romaniuk of Argentina, you said that, who had seen something concerning my activities with the Swiss case and wrote to tell me that he had been in contact with ET beings who told him their home was in what we call Alcyon in the Pleiades. I received scores of letters from sincere people who claimed they had observed UFO craft that were very similar or even identical with some of the spacecraft pictured in the preliminary report. All of the UFO clubs were receiving these too, which infuriated them to the extent that none of them ever told me what they were receiving. I had to get my information from those who were put down by the clubs for even reporting. Having examined all of this from a knowledgeable point of view, we can draw some comparisons that seem to be of interest. 1. All those mentioned here who claimed they came from what we call the Pleiades looked as much human as we and were all about our size in stature and build. 2. All of them articulated the language of their contactee, speaking fluently on our sciences, history, and culture. 3. They all said that Earth humanity was descended from their own ancient ancestors, from whom we had inherited our unusual aggressiveness. 4. All of them said their ancestors had been here many times before over the ages, coming and going as conditions changed. 5. They all claimed that they participated in some of the great events in our religious works and our mythologies, sometimes being adored and worshipped as gods, which they said they were not. 6. They all claimed extensive lifespans, at least 10 times what is normal for us now. 7. They all, without exception, deplore our misuse of our sciences today, saying that our mind has outrun our spiritual development, and that we have already prepared the end of our planet and our own species as we know it, and that we have done this before, over and over, and still have not learned this important lesson. For this we are a valuable laboratory study, and many ETs from far and wide come here to observe our stupidity. 8. They all travel faster than the speed of light, as we know it, in their interstellar trips. 9. There was no conclusive evidence that any of groups mentioned were in direct contact with any of the other Pleiadian groups mentioned. 10. They all mentioned other inhabited planets in what we call the Pleiades. 11. They all mentioned other extraterrestrial beings from elsewhere in the universe coming here to study and observe Earth. 3. Mentioned actual contact and willing cooperation with other ETs of other race types and systems. 3 of them used robotoid, part mechanical and part organic, created beings in limited operational functions. 12. They all used organic computers that could be controlled telepathically. Wow. 13. They all foresaw great changes in our planet in the near future. 14. None of them had money as we know it, religion, or a competitive political system. Boy, that sounds good. 15. 3 of them had active bases operating on the surface of our planet. 16. They all were capable of under-ocean operations and used our oceans to great advantage. 17. They all used a variety of different spacecraft in their operations, and they all had distinctive styles of ships and equipment, yet there were many similarities in many respects. 18. 3 groups that we know of used very large carrier-type motherships in deep space near our system while they were here. 19. In each case, to the group of individuals who formed around the contactee, the new contacts and information was so mind-boggling and so profound and so far exceeded their knowledge of what was going on elsewhere in this world that they carefully guarded their secret within their own immediate circle for a number of years, and then only confided it to very trusted friends. Number 20. Up to 1979, none of these groups ever heard of each other, and there was no cross-correspondence. To illustrate these similarities, we shall look at a couple of these other cases in great detail. We will review two cases that preceded the Swiss case, and one that was contemporary with it. We know of no new Pleiadian contacts since the Meyer case in Switzerland. Acaya, Peru. On Tuesday morning, the 14th of January, 1975, Charles A. Silva, having rested well from his grueling trip up here from Lima, was up early and checked his watch. It was 6:30 a.m., and it was raining heavily, but he went on down to the bathhouse anyway, as he was dying to get back in the carbonated water of the mineral bath once more. It felt so good that he stayed an hour relaxing and just thinking. A short time later, as he was having breakfast in the tiny lunchroom along the road there, he noticed a pickup truck stop and let someone off. It was Ramatis, the E.T. woman from the Pleiades he had met back in July of 1974, when this all had begun for him. Rama was already aware of his return to the area and had hitchhiked a ride to the lunchroom to meet him. What's wrong with her ship? Why didn't she take a ship? These contacts had already been going on for just about 6 months. He had by this time become convinced, after many demonstrations and revelations, that she was exactly what she said. He was beside himself with excitement, and all ears, as she told him, that not far down the road from here was a ship waiting for them, and today was going to be his first ride in a spaceship. He couldn't believe his ears. I remember reading this story. A man meets a lady in the mineral water baths or something, and she tells him that she's an alien, and he becomes friends with her, and her name was Rama. So I do recall this story. I've read this before. But now we're going to hear Wendell Stevens tell the story, and Mr. Silva is about to take a ride in a ship, and it's his first one. He paid his bill, and they went out and got in his Volkswagen and drove for about 15 minutes in the directions the woman pointed out. They were moving towards Huancayo when they came to a clearing where Rama asked him to pull off the road. He did and stopped the car there. Rama took him by the arm and led the way. By then the rain had let up considerably. As they walked, Chaco saw something that resembled a small rainbow, very weak in intensity. Rama told him that what he was seeing was an electromagnetic field that surrounds the spacecraft completely, thus making it invisible from all sides while standing on the ground. They were no more than 25 feet from the ship, and his eyes had not seen it. After they crossed the electric field barrier, the ship came into full view. This was not like the Vimenas he had seen previously, as it was much larger, but of the same form and shape. Now that he was closer, he could see that it was definitely metallic, with a silverish glow around it. Seen from that angle, it had a shape similar to a football, American-style football. The ship was resting on three metallic legs. Why wasn't it just hovering? Do they save energy by shutting down the engine and just letting it rest on the metallic legs? Rama asked him to take off his shoes. Uh-oh, watch out, Silva. She's closing in on you. And he wondered if Moses did the same on top of Mount Sinai so many long years ago. Rama had told him about some Exodus events. She said his shoes were wet from the rain, and water being a conductor of electricity, she didn't want him to get a shock. I'll have to use that line. They were both given footwear similar to sandals made out of heavy wood, and they climbed up the metal ladder that descended from a circular door. As Chaco entered, he experienced a sudden change in temperature and noticed that it was a bit colder than the already cold Andes Mountains. It was the same kind of feeling one gets upon entering an air-conditioned building from the heat outside, but this was stranger. Well, I had been wondering if their body temperature is the same as ours. I wonder what the temperature is on their planet and how all of these different Pleiadian groups differ from one another. Wendell Stevens covers 20 features that compare them, but I would like to see a list of contrasting features as well. Two crew members, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, greeted them in silence. They were wearing one-piece suits of shining gray color. It covered them from head to toe. Now, if they're 4.5 to 5 feet tall, are these human beings? They're wearing gray suits. Why is gray so popular with aliens? There was no doubt they were humanoids, and he didn't remember ever having seen anything like this on Earth before. He had a creepy feeling, though they were very peaceful in demeanor. He felt safe with them, but still a lingering fear of the unknown existed and held him back a little. That didn't last long, for as soon as he took two more steps, he came face to face with their crew leader standing inside an oval room about 25 feet in length, 15 to 20 across, and about 7 high. The illumination came from all over the room, with a touch of an orange, almost red glow. He had a nice face, benevolent attitude, long nose and slanted eyes. Not like Rama's. Not Oriental either. When he looked at Chaco, it was plain that he had no eyelashes, and he didn't blink, but there was definitely eye activity. It took him a little while to put his finger on what it was that made those eyes alive. It was the pupils that narrowed and widened as he communicated with them. And the guy was not scared out of his pants? I guess he'd been talking to Rama for a while, and she sort of prepared him, so he was ready for anything. If I was meeting extraterrestrials, I'd have diarrhea. Hi, this is Hegjoff. Right there in my pants. After he got up from a triangular chair directly in front of some control panels, he walked forward to receive them. Rama and the crew leader exchanged glances. It seemed as though they had planned this visit. He then looked at Chaco, who instinctively walked with him toward the control panel. The ET's mouth did not move, but Chaco could hear muffled words and sentences, and it sounded as though he had a heavy accent. He's not from around here. He seemed to sense that Chaco had difficulty understanding him. Suddenly, he could hear him inside his head perfectly, in the same way that he and Rama had conducted their mind-to-mind chats. Wow, I gotta try that. The ET showed Chaco around the craft. The instrument panels looked like the kind of consoles one would find in a computer operating room. There were portholes all around the craft, and his host told him that they were in an observation ship with a crew of 4. Up to this time, he had seen only 2. The ET flipped a switch, and a screen-like device lit up, and they were able to see the outside of the ship, where the other 2 crew members were. "Where do you come from?" Chaco asked. "We are from a system not too far from here." Not too far. In the blink of an eye, they can go 500 light years. Not too far. The ET opened a scroll, and Chaco could see an oval map with many kinds of dots on it. He pointed to a group of stars and said, pointing, that this was the constellation of Taro, star Alcyon, the Pleiades. He pointed to our sun. He showed Chaco his home planet on the map. But to him it just looked like a bunch of dots. The ET said they had bases on Mars and Venus, and Chaco answered, "What about Earth?" "Not our bases, but bases that all of us, are cooperatively keeping here on Earth. It is our mission as peaceful intelligences to maintain the balance of the universe. With our terrestrial bases, we keep an eye on you. In a few minutes, we're going to see one of the bases here in South America. But first, you must tell Rama where you want your car. He turned to Rama, who was carefully observing his reactions, and told her that he was supposed to go to the city called Trujillo and to another called Chiclayo, both located on the northern coast of Peru, 500 miles to the north of Lima. Somehow, they had hooked his Volkswagen up under the ship, and he could see it on the screen. The thought hit him, what would the car rental agency think if they knew that one of their cars made it to Chiclayo in about 9 minutes from where they had been before? About 800 miles as the crow flies. Well, they have GPS, and they might have been able to track it, and they would know exactly where that car is at all time. They would see the very rapid rate at which it moved from one point to another, and that would tell them that the ship was moved by extraterrestrials. The government knows about the ETs. They know about all the bases and all the species that are here. They just don't tell us anything. Now that the car was attached and they were ready to depart, Rama exchanged some information with the crew leader, and Chaco was placed between him and Rama, and she went on to explain. This machine is operated through reversible electromagnetism. See those columns going to that rotor that looks like transparent plastic? Yes. Well, those are reactors. When the mercury in that rotor gets going full speed, we can reverse the magnetic and electrical energy. That way we can control matter and also overcome the forces of gravity. So note that mercury is involved in anti-gravity propulsion systems. When they took off, Chaco said he felt a very great force, and Rama told him not to worry. They stopped and hovered for a while over an old road that led to the Panamericana Highway near a little town not far from the city of Chiclayo. There they unloaded the Volkswagen, though they did not get out of the ship. Rama said they would leave it there for an hour or two. Later, she and Chaco would come back in a Vimana, which is a small craft for two or three people. Well, you got me wondering here. They can fly around in our environment, yet when they took off, Chaco felt a great force. We didn't have that with Billy Meyer. These are not the same Pleiadians. They don't have the same ships. They ascended again, but at a lesser speed, flying on over the Andes Mountains again at a great altitude. He could see some commercial jetliners far below them as tiny specks of light when they reflected the sun. Descending gradually at a distance, he could see a big body of water. Rama said it was Lake Titicaca, and that they were going down into it. Now, Lake Titicaca is known for UFO activity, and it's been that way for centuries. Chaco opened his eyes wide as he saw the lake approaching, expecting crash, or at least a marked change going from one density to another, but it was smooth, and there was nothing resembling a crash when they hit the water. Then there was another change in density, and suddenly they were up in the air, flying through the clouds. He saw some ice-covered mountains in the distance and recognized them as the ice peaks 25 miles from Huancayo. He could see the Mantaro Valley with its river running in the center of it and the scenery all around. You notice that this copy has many mistakes, and that I'm figuring out what it really says and reading the correction. They landed the ship somewhere close to the ice peaks, where Rama's Vimana was waiting for them. Chaco then thanked the crew leader for the tour, and that one said they would see each other again in a few days. Rama flew the Vimana to Chiclayo, where it was left hiding behind some sandhills, and they walked to where the car was left earlier. Chaco had actually flown in two different kinds of UFOs, and he considered it the experience of a lifetime. As they walked to the car, Rama repeated her earlier suggestion that Chaco write all this down for later. Now she added, "The purpose of writing this down is not for the reporting of UFOs. From now on, you and I, and my friends from other worlds, are going to see a lot of each other. You will be getting in and out of spacecraft. You'll see motherships and more of our surface bases. Don't bother writing about that, because much of that has been written already. Besides you yourself, nobody would believe it anyway." "That's right. What I'd like you to do is to write about our conversations and hope that those few who choose to believe you do so out of conviction after they have corroborated it with the reading suggestions that we are going to give. Also, choose to accept that some people, human beings from other planets, are already here. That is the purpose of the message." This race type mentioned here is only one of several working in complete harmony with humans from the Pleiades who, true to their word, continued to return. In our preliminary report of investigation, we have mentioned the stone records of another generation of human visitors who came and went several times in the many thousand-year history of that civilization in what is now Ocucaje Desert near Ica, Peru, south of Lima. Those records have been expanded now by Dr. Javier Cabrera, and their narrative fills many hundreds of pages.